Greetings from Church of the Resurrection, and thank you for taking time to listen to this message. We hope you find this message meaningful and relevant. We invite you to join us in worship at any time. We are located just south of 135th Street between Roe and Nall Avenue in Leawood, Kansas. If you have any questions or comments, or you would like a DVD of this service, you may reach us by phone at 913-897-0120. Please ask for the Well Bookstore, or visit our website at www.cor.org, where you will find a link for our catalog. And now, may you be blessed as you give attention to the reading of God's Word.
And so tonight I want you to hear these words about blessing that is passed from God to us, from father to children. These words from Genesis 49. Then Jacob said to his son Joseph, "The blessings of your father are stronger than the blessings of the eternal mountains." May God add a blessing to the reading, the hearing, and the understanding of God's word. Amen.
And there was this time that I was with a couple of my friends, and my dad was driving us somewhere, so we were in the back seat of the car, driving through a neighborhood, and the neighborhood at the entrance had a basketball court. And there were a couple of guys playing basketball on the basketball court, and they were guys who went to our middle school who were a couple of years older than us, and they were really cute guys. Mm-hmm. And so my dad pulls over, rolls down all the windows of the vehicle, and says, "Hey guys, there are some girls in the back who want your number," and sits there for a good 20 seconds. Well, we have to dive onto the floor of the car before he drives away. And that will probably always stick out as one of the most humiliating things he did to me during that period of my life.
He doesn't have the greatest memory always either about memories. And so he'll always, not on purpose, but the story will come out a little bit different than how it actually happened. He'll tell them in church sometimes, and then people will come up to me and be like, "Oh, I heard this happens." Like, that didn't actually happen. That's not true.
When something got spilled.
Yeah.
That's the one time that he really, really gets upset. Even if it's something that can easily be cleaned up, something that won't stain anyway, if it spills, his face just gets red and he gets the voice. And
Rebecca Nicole? Uh-oh.
Okay, I have to set this straight just a little bit. When it comes to spills, I mean, I used to have kind of a hang-up about it, but I've sort of mellowed out over time, but you have to hear the other side of the spill story. I'll just give you one example of a spill story in our house. So some years ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I bought a really cool recliner. You know, like every guy wants to have a recliner, his chair, you know, and I found this recliner. It was on sale, and it was this natural leather finish. It was really quite beautiful, and it was the nicest piece of furniture we had ever bought. And as I was buying it, the guy in the store said, "Now, you don't have kids, do you?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I do." And he said, "Oh, this isn't a chair for people with kids, you know, because it's got this natural finish and you can't have anything spilled on it." I said, "Oh, that's okay. My kids won't spill anything on it." And I took it home and I said, "Okay, kids, this is Daddy's chair, all right? You don't sit in this chair. It's my chair." And I mean, I let LaVon sit in it once in a while, but it was basically my chair. So, you know, after a couple months, then they start sitting on my chair, and that's fine. I mean, I'm okay with that. But I said, "Now, listen, if you're going to sit in my chair, no food in my chair. You never eat or drink anything in this chair because it's got a natural finish and it'll mess it up if it spills in there." "Okay, Dad, okay." So one Friday night, we're watching a movie together as a family, and then LaVon and I go to bed, and Rebecca stays up to watch another movie. And she decides, you know, that the rule about the no food in the chair is just one of the stupidest rules. And Dad's not awake anyway, and what he doesn't know is not going to hurt him. So she pours herself a big old glass of milk and gets some cookies, and she sits down to have milk and cookies in the chair. And all that, you know, would probably have been fine. She drinks only half the glass of milk and then leaves it sitting on the table next to the chair, and she goes to bed. And somewhere in the middle of the night, Charlie, our black cat, decides that he's really wanting some of that milk, and the only way he can get it is to tip the glass over, and it spills milk all over the arms, the seat, and the back of my chair. And, you know, Charlie licks up what he wants, and then he leaves the rest for me. And so I wake up in the morning, and I get up, and I see the chair, and I see coagulated milk, you know, having totally become ingrained in the leather of my nice chair. And I went a little ballistic. And I I shouted upstairs, Rebecca, who's sound asleep, Rebecca Nicole Hamilton, get down here right now. And she came down, and I looked at the chair. I said, what were you thinking? What part of don't eat or drink in my chair did you not understand? And she says, Dad, calm down. It's just a chair. That was the wrong answer. All right. So, you know, that's just one example, of course. There's a myriad of things I could tell you and the girls could tell you about ways that I blew it as a dad. Or if not blew it, at least, you know, wasn't the perfect father who was always calm and peaceful and, you know, all of that. And I want you to notice the series of sermons that we're starting today is not called Expert Advice from the Best Dad in the World. It's called Confessions of a Struggling Parent. And this one in particular, Confessions of a Struggling Father. And what I'd like to offer is 22 years of perspective on fathering tonight, to think together with you and to confess to you some of the places where I think I didn't always get it right and what I might have learned from that and what you might learn from it. And so we're going to talk about fathering tonight. Next week, Pastor Karen Lampe is going to preach about mothering. She's an empty nester. Her kids are all grown. And so she's going to talk specifically to moms. And the last week, I'm going to talk about, you know, what our parents who are older have to teach us about childrening with our parents, and what we can expect as we continue to age. So that's where this whole series is going. I do want to mention something right up front. When we talk about tonight fathering, I want you to listen to the sermon on two levels. I want you to listen to what I'm saying about dads and moms and aunts and uncles and grandparents and people who invest in the lives of children. But then I also want you to think about what does the message say about our relationship with our Heavenly Father? What does it teach us about God and about us? Even while you're listening to, what does it say about dads and their children, okay? So that's where we're going to be heading. And what I want to do to begin with is just remind you of a very important biblical idea, which is blessings and curses. In the Bible, blessings, this is a big idea. You remember God said to Abraham, I will bless you so that you might be a blessing, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed through you. So there's this huge idea of blessing, and this carries through the entire Bible. So we continue that mission. We're blessed by God to be a blessing. But what is a blessing? Well, a blessing is goodness poured into our lives. It's a desire for wholeness, for shalom, for positive things to happen in our lives. It's goodness poured into us, a blessing. And a blessing may be what we currently experience, or it may be what's coming for us later. So a blessing is to wish for something good or to actually give something good to someone else. That would be a blessing. A state of blessedness. Now, there's also curses, and to be cursed is to be in a state where your life is not enriched, but diminished, where instead of good things, you're experiencing bad things. And you'll remember that Moses says to the people of Israel, as they're standing before the promised land, he says to them, listen, I lay before you today life or death, blessings or curses. And you have a chance to decide. Will you choose a path away from God, in which case you'll find curses and death, and your life will be diminished and not enriched? Or you can pursue God, and you can find your life is blessed. It's enriched. There's good things. So we get to choose, in some ways, by our actions, whether we'll experience blessings or curses in our lives. But then there's also this idea in the Scripture that parents pass on blessings or potentially curses to their children. So we pass on blessings primarily. And so in the book of Genesis, you find several stories of deathbed blessings, of patriarchs passing on blessings to their children before the patriarch dies. And the most fascinating of these to me is Jacob. Now, Jacob is a twin. His older brother, born just before him, is Esau. And their father is Isaac. And in Genesis chapter 26, Jacob's father, Isaac, is about to die. And the oldest brother always gets a greater blessing, all right? So Jacob wants the greater blessing. So he and his mother conspire to trick their elderly father. Isaac is blind and he's senile. And so what they do is they dress Jacob up in Isaac or in Esau's clothes. They make him smell like Esau. They make him talk like Esau. And he comes in and he asks for his father's blessing. And his father lays his hand on Jacob thinking it's Esau. And he gives him the blessing, which says, your brother will serve you. And other words that Isaac speaks that have power. Now, here's what you need to know. When a father spoke words of blessing into their children's lives, those words had power. They were almost a promise. They set the child's life on a different trajectory. So when the father said something, the child's life tended to end up in that direction. And so Jacob received the blessing there. Now, you have a chance to read the rest of Jacob's story from Genesis 26 all the way to Genesis 49. And when you get to Genesis 49, Jacob is now on his deathbed. And he brings all of his sons in around the bed. There's 12 sons there. And he begins to bless his sons. But what's interesting, some of the words he speaks to some of his sons are more like curses instead of blessings. He talks about what he sees in them, and the words are harsh, and they're even hurtful. And they set those children's lives and their children's children on a trajectory that goes along with the, quote, blessing, really a curse that the father gave them, that Jacob gave. But with other of his sons, he gave very positive blessings, wishing wonderful things and foretold a tremendous future for them, including Joseph, his favorite. And so Joseph receives this blessing from his father, Jacob. Now, at the end of giving those blessings, we read the scripture that we have before us, where Jacob says to Joseph, "The blessings of your father are stronger than the blessings of the eternal mountains." This is a huge idea, that what your father, in this case, what your father or what your parents have poured into you in terms of what they've said about you, what they've foretold, what they've told you about yourself, and the things that they've poured into your life, they are stronger than the blessings of the mountains. And you know that. I mean, each of us have been affected by our parents in profound ways, for good or for bad. Now, there's a different sermon that I would love to preach tonight in addition to the one I have. And if I could have you here for an extra hour and a half, I would do both of these sermons. But that other sermon would be this, that just because your father or mother poured into your life a curse, they spoke words into you that were hurtful or that set your life on a negative trajectory, you don't have to become what your father or mother said you would be. I would want you to know that. And here's the thing. When you trust in God, God is able to break the power of the curse of the past and to take the curses and to turn them into blessings. I have a friend who's a pastor, an exceptionally gifted pastor, compassionate and caring for people. He lived in a very abusive home when he was growing up. And in that abusive home, he was told, he was hurt physically. He was told by his father that he was nothing. But when he gave his life to Christ, he found that God said he was something and his life had value and meaning. And God took all of the pain from his childhood and transformed it so that what God did with this is he gave this man a pastor's heart. He gave him a heart of compassion and care for other people that breaks for other people and made him a remarkable pastor. And so God took the curses of his father and transformed it into a blessing. And God has the power to do that in your life too. So you don't have to be what your father says you had to be if your dad pronounced curses into your life or your mom too. But that's another story. I just want you to make sure that you know that. What we want to talk about today is when parents are trying to bless their children, when they're trying to pour blessings into their children. And the question I want to ask you today is, what blessings will you bestow upon the children in your life? Your kids, your grandkids, your nieces, your nephews, kids in Sunday school here. All right, so with this in mind, I want to suggest first that sometimes parents seek to bless their children, but the blessings they seek to give ultimately end up becoming curses. This is a lesson that I learned after 22 years of fathering. Now that my kids are grown, sometimes what I thought I was doing to bless them was actually potentially hurting them. So let's just be clear about this. I wish somebody told me this early on, and I kind of knew it. But there are three ways that I think this happens, at least. The first has to do with something that we value so much, and that is being close to our children. So we've come to measure a good father, especially dads, because moms have always tried to do this, but dads weren't always measuring their success as a father based upon how close they were to their kids, right? I mean, you know, previous generations of dads weren't quite as involved in the lives of their kids as today's generations are. And so today we think, if I'm a good dad, my kids are close to me, and we want to be close to our children. It's a deep desire in our hearts. Now, Richard Weisbord, who teaches at Harvard, he's a child psychologist, says, "American parents are engaged in a giant social experiment. We are seeking a new kind of closeness with our children. Legions of fathers are trying, in contrast to their own fathers, to be far more involved in their children's daily lives, attuned to their children's troubles, and open to share with their children their own hopes and vulnerabilities." And I think that's a good thing. But here's where the challenge comes in. If you begin to believe that the most important mission as a father is to be close to your children and for your children to be close to you, you may have forgotten what the real most important mission is. Your mission as a father is to develop these children and to have them grow up so that they know God and love God, so that they love their neighbors, so that they live compassionate and just lives, so that they're servants, so that they function well in society. That's your job. We'll talk more about that in a minute. If you put that on the back burner and your real priority begins to be, I need my kids to be close to me, you start doing some pretty stupid things. And you don't mean to. You want to bless them by having them be close to you. But, you know, we just heard on the news a few weeks ago, a mother who buys alcohol for her kids' party. Right? Why? Well, so her kids will think she's cool. So there'll be a closeness there, right? I mean, there's somehow, and it's not just a story somewhere else. It happens in this community. And so we forget the mission, and we focus on having our kids be close to us. Now, that's not something most of us would probably do, but the thing that I struggled with wasn't buying alcohol for my kids. It was holding fast on the boundaries and disciplining my kids. So when you really want to be close to your kids, and you have this boundary or this rule, and you establish it because you want to do the right thing and nurture these kids to grow up in a healthy way, and then the kid says, you know, your daughter says to you, no other dad has that rule. Dad, and then it gets worse. You hear the dreaded, you are the meanest dad in the world. Now, when you're judging your success as a father based on how close your kids are to you, and your kid says you're the meanest dad in the world, you're a total failure. If that's the primary job, is to make your kids feel close to you. And so what begins to happen is, you know, I found I sort of got worn down sometimes, you know. They'd keep saying these kind of things, and then you'd think, well, maybe I am the meanest dad in the world. Maybe I need to, you know, and so you cave. And, you know, when they tell you every kid gets to stay up all night long during the school week, Dad, everyone except for me, you know, and you begin thinking, well, maybe I should let you stay up a little bit later. And so you struggle with this. And while you want to bless them by having them feel close to you, you might actually curse them by not doing the things that would help them to grow up to be healthy and responsible, to love God and to love their neighbors. All right, so a second way in which we try to bless, but sometimes we end up cursing our kids, is closely related to the first. And that is, we have this idea that our job as parents is to make our children happy. So we want our kids to be happy. I want my children to be happy. And I can do a lot to make them happy. And I have an idea of what it might take. And so, you know, it really becomes the focus of that relationship. So you're going to go out to eat, and you ask the kids, where do you want to go out to eat? I remember having these arguments, you know. I mean, we're going to go out to a nice restaurant to eat. Well, they didn't want that. They wanted McDonald's, Happy Meals, you know. So we go over to McDonald's instead of going to this place. And how many times does the whole family change what it's going to do because the kid wants to do this particular thing? Because you want to make them happy. You're going to give them a Happy Meal, right? And so, you know, vacations. You ask your six-year-old where they want to go on vacation? I mean, they don't know what things cost in different places, you know. So there's this. There's giving them things to make them happy, right? And so it's like, you know, we want them to be happy. So anything they want, we want to give them. And we can afford to give it to them. And so you know, we ask them, what do you want for your birthday? What do you want for Christmas? You know, and then we go to the Christmas thing, and every year, it's got to be something really bigger than the last year. We got to top the last year and have it be really cool. And we don't want them, I mean, the worst thing would be for them to be disappointed, you know, at Christmas. And so then, you know, I don't know about you, but we have, you know, sometimes the orgies of Christmas present opening. And by the time you get done, the kids are tired. I mean, they're worn out from opening all the presents. And how excited are they about those last few presents? You know, often not very. But here's one of the interesting things I found. I was reading another book this week. It's a book on Madeline Levine wrote it. She's a child psychologist in Marin County in California, a very similar kind of community to this. And the book was called The Price of Privilege. And she talks about raising kids in an affluent society. And part of what she noted is that there's this paradox of happiness, that the more you try to give your children happiness, the less happy they are. And you know kind of how this works, don't you? Like, part of what makes something a joy for you is working for it and struggling and sacrificing for it. But if you just get it, it fulfills you for a moment, but not for long. And what she said is, in her practice, she was meeting lots and lots of teenagers who were empty, even though their parents tried to give them everything. And then, by the way, if you give your kids everything as they're growing up in those teenage years, what do they have to look forward to in the rest of their life? I mean, you sort of ruin them. But it goes beyond that. When you focused on making your kids happy by giving them everything, well, in the end, you've created not grateful kids who are easily satisfied. You've created ungrateful, narcissistic people who believe the whole world revolves around their happiness. You didn't mean to create that. It just happened in the process of trying to give them everything. You wanted them to be happy and give them all you could, everything you didn't have when you were a child. The last of the ways that we can sometimes, and I've been guilty of, of meaning to bless my children, but in the end, perhaps cursing them, is trying to rescue them and save them from any disappointment or adversity or pain or suffering. I didn't want my children to experience any hardship. I didn't want them to experience pain or suffering or disappointment. And so in the midst of that, you know, you begin looking at, well, how do you rescue them? Like, if something's going to, you know, if there's a child who's making fun of them at school, you send them to another class. Or you transfer them to a different school. And sometimes those things have to happen. I mean, I'm not saying you just shouldn't ever do that. The teacher's going to give them a bad grade. Well, what do? You don't want your kid to get a bad grade. I mean, what could that do to their self-esteem? And so you know, you get on the phone with the teacher and you say, you know what? I don't think it's my child's fault. My child is brilliant. I think if you were a better teacher, you'd know how to teach my child. And so they wouldn't be getting this grade. So you better not give them the grade I'm exaggerating, but... they're going to get cut from the team. No, they can't. You can't cut my child from the team. That'll just wreck their self-esteem. And so we got to find, you know, we'll buy the jerseys if you'll just, you know, let my kid stay on the team. I mean, I don't know what. But here's the thing. When you're constantly protecting your children from disappointment and adversity and pain, you actually, in the end up hurting them. Here's what James says in his epistle. He says, consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, because the trials of your faith produce endurance and maturity. Now, if your children don't experience any trials, they're going to be missing out on endurance and maturity. Or Paul says that suffering produces character and hope. So if you don't let your children experience any adversity or disappointment or pain, you may be robbing them of developing character and hope. So, you know, there's a balance here. You want to save them from the things that would really be crushing, but somehow you also need to let them experience disappointment and heartache and pain sometimes in their life. Now, remember I told you that this sermon is at two levels. It's about fathers and children. It's about God and us. I want you to ponder that for a little while. All of these things I've just talked about, and they begin to answer some of the questions as to why God doesn't answer every single prayer we ask, you know, and do everything we want Him to do, and why sometimes we go through hard things. It's because God, as a father, tries to get it right. Actually, He does get it right. He doesn't want to curse us. He wants to bless us, and the blessings sometimes come by withholding things from us instead of giving us everything that we ask for. All right. I will tell you that for Levonomy, it was a struggle. I mean, trying to figure out the right thing. I mean, so many times, are we being too strict? Are we being not strict enough? Are we giving them too much? Are we not giving them enough? And it's hard to figure that out. And though there have been 75,000 books published on parenting, no one of those authors parented your children. And so it's hard to figure out how to do the right thing when it comes to being a parent. It was hard for your parents to figure out, and they struggled with these same things, no doubt. All right. Let me just say one word about that too. We have in our minds that that somehow there's a secret out there and there's really perfect parents. There are no perfect parents. Every parent wants to be a good parent. There are no perfect parents. And I have watched kids who grew up in homes that I thought were idyllic. I mean, these parents got it as right as anybody I've ever seen, and the kids still had problems. And I've watched kids who grew up in very dysfunctional homes, and they turned out to be amazing. And so even when you try your best to get it right, you may not. And even if you did everything right, your kids still may not turn out right. And that's why one of the key parts of being a good parent is prayer. I mean, you do the best you can. That's all God asks of you. You do the best you can. In hindsight, you change some things, of course. You do the best you can, and you pray a lot. You say, God, help me make up for the deficiencies in my own parenting. All right, well, let's switch gears here, and let's talk about something else I wished I had learned before I became a parent, and that is the life changes, the life transitions that happen naturally with kids from the time that they're babies until they grow up. Now, my kids are 18, almost 19, and 22. They've both moved away from home. Danielle next weekend is getting married here in the Wesley Chapel, and Rebecca's in college right now, and so I can only tell you about the life stages up through age 22. In a couple of weeks, we're going to talk to older parents who will tell us what happens after that. But here's what I've learned, is there are, at least for us, I've noticed three distinct life phases. All right, the first one, it starts at birth, and it goes to, well, for girls, somewhere between fifth grade and eighth grade. And during that first phase, life is wonderful. I mean, it's awesome being a daddy. It's not that it's not without its challenges. I mean, there's colic and ear infections and, your kid bites somebody in the nursery or whatever. But But it's also just idyllic because you're your children's hero. I mean, it's a pretty heady thing to be some little girl's hero. And I remember we lived right behind the church here for 6 or 7 years, and I would walk home from the church, and the kids knew about when I was coming home, and before I could get to the back door, the door would fling wide open, and they'd come running out, "Daddy's home! Daddy's home!" And they'd each wrap themselves around one of my legs, and I'd try to walk in to the house carrying them, and, you know, we'd wrestle and butterfly kisses, and, you know, Danielle would say, "Daddy, I love you from here to Jupiter and beyond," and Rebecca would say, "Daddy, I want to marry you someday." And it wasn't creepy, you know, it was just sweet. And, you know, "Daddy, you're my hero." And we'd go out in public and they'd hold my hand and big bear hugs and all these things that are just the most wonderful experience you could possibly have. And then something happens. And it was weird. I mean, it happened overnight for each of these kids. You know, for Danielle, it happened like in fifth grade. And she woke up one day, and I was a hero one day, and I was a zero the next. I mean, I knew everything, and then I knew nothing. She couldn't wait to see me, and then she didn't want to see me for anything. She pushed me away. I'd try to hold hands with her in public, and, I mean, I'd try to hug her, and she'd shirk me off, you know, or if I made her hug me, it was like this, you know. It's like, what did I do? I mean, I was so confused. What did I do? I'm the same guy I've always been. What? And, you know, there was just like this irritation and sometimes anger, and I could not for the life of me figure it out. But I do know this, it broke my heart. I mean, really, it was the hardest thing to experience. And, you know, I don't know if this happens with boys, but some of you ladies out there, I just encourage you to think back, you know, because you may not know that this is what your dad was feeling or thinking at those moments, you know, when this was happening, but it probably happened in your family too. And so, you know, so I kept trying to figure this out, and the more I tried and the harder I tried, the more, you know, it was like this. And so, you know, I began trying to figure out, well, how do I deal with this life phase? And it lasted from about fifth grade until they moved away from home. So maybe seventh grade. And it wasn't like terrible all the time. There were good moments in between, but it was just different. And people would tell me, "Hey, Adam, it's going to be okay, man. Just hold on. Just keep loving them through this. And you know, they're going to come out the other side and they're going to turn back to you." And I would think, yeah, your kids did, but mine probably aren't. They're going to hate me forever. And I don't even know what I did. And anyway, I thought it might be interesting for you to hear my kids describe those phases. By the way, once they moved out from home, it was pretty amazing. I mean, my IQ began to shoot back up, and they began to, you know, we began to reestablish a relationship. But I thought you might find it interesting. My kids were interviewed by our video department. I was not in there, and they just had a chance to talk, and they asked them about these life changes. Take a listen.
I think that I kind of started out as a daddy's girl and just had that really close, fun relationship with my dad.
I was definitely a daddy's girl for a long time. Me and him always joked around and got along because we were goofy together.
And through the years, that kind of fell off, especially like late elementary school, middle school, where I just didn't want to have anything to do with either of my parents.
I saw it as just like trying to hinder me from being a teenager, and that was really annoying. I think I've definitely grown out of the juvenile phase that I was in, that just I didn't care about having a relationship with my parents, and I didn't want to.
As I started to grow up, we've been able to kind of reconnect on a more intellectual level. Like, we'll talk about politics and what we see in the world and justice issues and that sort of thing. I think that's really where we relate today still, is just over kind of more that intellectual ground.
So those are the three life phases. You start, and it's this wonderful idyllic, and then it turns into this sort of crazy, confusing, sometimes painful moment, you know, time. And then you move into this phase, if you continue to try to love through the hard times, where they turn back. And it's really cool. Now, just for those of you who are dads and maybe your kids are small, just to give you a few hints of, here's what I tried to do. And I'm not certain I got it right, but the few of the things, I tried to figure out, how could I still connect with my kids with things they were really interested in so that we could, I wouldn't force them all the time to do stuff. Just, I'd try to find ways that we could connect. So for Danielle, she had a love of horses. And so we got her an old horse and I tried to learn a little bit about horses and show up for her competitions and, you know, celebrate with her on those. And so that was, you know, one small way. I found both kids when they turned 14 wanted to learn how to drive. It's like, I had the keys to the car. It was pretty cool. You want to drive? Cool. Come with me. You got to spend some time with me if you want to drive. So we'd go out and, you know, we'd drive, and that was a neat deal. And Danielle, as she got older, she began having interest in politics, and I love politics, so we'd stay up every once in a while and talk politics. And then she enjoyed going, she enjoyed thinking about world travel, and when I'd go on a mission trip to Honduras or Russia or Africa, I took her with me. And those were special times. For Rebecca, she had a real interest. She loved rock and roll music, 1970s classic rock, and I loved that too. And so I bought her a turntable, and we'd go out to garage sales on Saturdays and find old vinyl records for 25 cents or 50 cents a piece, and we'd talk about the music. And we didn't do that a lot, but we did it some of the time. We'd go out antiquing. But the thing that I stumbled on with Rebecca is, you know, she hated the fact that she had a curfew. And so one night we began talking about, you know, what would happen if we decided to go out late after her curfew and get pancakes. We both like pancakes. So we went to Denny's or IHOP and we got pancakes, and that started a tradition. And it surprised me when Rebecca was being interviewed that she mentioned this as something she appreciated. And I thought you'd kind of enjoy what she said. Take a listen.
Something that I really appreciated growing up that my dad did, and still now, he still tries to now, is that he always wanted to meet or to like take me to IHOP or something or Denny's in the middle of the night, which I thought was so cool. It was like, who gets to go to IHOP at 4 in the morning? Only drunk people. And I want to go. Not because I wanted to be drunk, but just because, I don't know, I wouldn't normally be able to do that. And so he took that time to just try and connect with me and talk with me. And he wasn't ever usually trying to force like religious conversation on me or just like conversation that like about school that I wouldn't want to have, just like conversation that wasn't small talk, that was how are you doing and let me try and talk to you more and just connect. So I appreciate that now, definitely, and he still calls me up and wants to see if I want to go out, which is nice.
And you know what was really cool was last week Rebecca called me and said, "Hey, Dad, you want to go out and get some pancakes?" And so we went and got pancakes and worked crossword puzzles together. The last thing I'd mention, just as an idea for moms and dads, is before our kids were born, the night before they were born, I wrote a letter to each of them, and that began a tradition where every year on their birthday I write them a letter. And in that letter, when they were little, of course, they couldn't even read it, but I just saved those letters for the future. And then now they do read their birthday letters. And I describe what happened in the last year and what I've seen in them in terms of their gifts and who they are and what it's been like in our relationship, both the good and the bad. And then the very last paragraph is always, "I want you to know how much I love you." And, you know, now they read those letters on their birthday, but my hunch is that those letters won't really mean much to them until I'm gone. And then sometime after I'm gone, there'll be an envelope for each of them with all of their birthday letters up until they're however old they are at that time. And I just imagine in my mind that they go through and they start reading those. And what I really hope they figure out from that is my daddy loved me an awful lot. And that's part of the blessing. You see the power of a blessing when you pour a blessing into someone else's life, a child's life? It changes how they see themselves, and it changes the world for them when you pour the blessing in. So don't give up on your kids, even during those tough times. You keep trying, you hold on, you keep praying, and somehow they come out the other side. All right, here's the last thing I'd want to mention to you is just, you know, asking this question. I mean, if the blessings of a parent are stronger than the blessings of the eternal mountains, then what kind of blessings do you want to pour into your child? And I think you have to be intentional about this. And part of what you have to do is think about, well, when they're grown, what do I hope for them? What's my vision for what they're like out here? And then back here, how do I start pouring the blessings in to see them reach this point? So part of what you have to ask as a parent is, you know, what's the point of human existence? What's the goal so I can raise my kids to experience that? What does it mean to be fully and authentically human? And for me, the answer to that is found in Jesus' answer to the question, what are the most important things to God? And he says, listen, I mean, using this terminology, he would have said, to be fully human is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as you love yourself. To love your neighbor is to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly before God. And so those were the most important things in my life to want to give to my children. I wanted them to grow up to be someone who loved God and loved their neighbor. Then I also wanted them to have healthy relationships, and especially with boys. I have prayed over and over for the boys that someday they'll marry. And so I wanted to try for Levonomy to model for them what a healthy marriage looks like so that they might see glimpses of that. And our marriage isn't perfect, but for them to see a picture of what might be a healthy marriage. And then I wanted them to have some idea of what they do in their lives in the future. So I tried to help them see possibilities. Levon did such a great job of this as well. And then finally, we wanted them to experience love. Those were the blessings we sought to pour into their lives. Now, I want to say just a word about our kids and their faith development. You can't make a child believe in God. You can't make your children be Christians. You can pray for them. You can model for them what it means to be a Christian. We've tried to do that with our kids. We made sure they were in Sunday school all their years growing up, in worship. They had to be in worship until they moved away from the home. We taught them about tithing, and they had to tithe on their allowance. We shared with them what we give away and the reasons for it. We tried to give them, LaVon did a great job of giving them experiences, making sack lunches for the homeless, and we took them on mission trips. And all of these things were aimed at, you know, we read them Bible stories and taught them the scriptures and tried to live before them this way. At bedtime, you know, I would go in at night and kneel at their bedside and pray for them every night. And you know, what we counted on is the fact that they would see something real in us. And at some point, they would claim that for themselves. Now, they did that in confirmation, but, you know, they got into high school, and they began asking questions about their faith and struggling with their faith and trying to figure out, who are we apart from being Pastor Adam Hamilton's daughters? And so as they did that, their faith, you know, they began to wrestle with their faith. And that tore me up at first, because this was the most important gift I could possibly give my kids, and they didn't seem to want it. And that was very hard. And part of what I had to recognize is that this is a part of development, faith development and life development for many, many people. I want to ask this question. How many of you in this room, when you were in your teens or early 20s, turned away from God or didn't attend church very often or weren't interested in or were doing things God wouldn't have wanted you to do? Just raise your hand. Come on, raise them high. All right. Now that looks to me like two-thirds of you in this room. And yet here you are on a Sunday night attending worship. Something happened in you. You walked away, but then you came back. And that's part of what happens in our faith development. I met with our music team, our worship ministry team, and our children's ministry staff, and I said to our staff, how many of you turned away from God when you were teenagers or in your early 20s? Half of them. And yet, they're working for a church now. They're on staff in a church today. And I'm reminded of what the book of Proverbs says. It says, train up a child in the way they should go, and when they are old, they will not depart from it. Did you catch that? It doesn't say when they are a teenager, they will not depart from it. It says when they are old, they will not depart from it. And so part of what we count on, you know, at those times where your kids are struggling with their faith, you try to help them see why your faith is important to you. You know, I write that in their birthday letters every year. And you know, continue to try to answer the questions that you can. And you continue to pray for them over and over and over again. And then you give them some space, too. And in the process of that, you know, somehow those kids have a way of figuring out in the end that all the stuff they learned when they were kids and what they saw in you is really true. So I just want to give that word of encouragement to those of you who may be wrestling right now with your parents or with your children and their struggle in the faith. All right. Well, in the end, the folks who interviewed my kids just asked, you know, so what do you take away from your mom and dad? What did you get out of this experience? And I was just interested to hear what they would have to say. I thought you might find it interesting, too. It just sort of points to little things that kids at 18 and 22 look back on and appreciate from their parents. And my guess is 10 years from now, their answers will be different still. But this is what my kids said right now. And I guess I'd ask you, what do you think your kids would say? And I think you might be surprised at the neat things that your kids would have taken away from being raised in your home. This is what mine said.
One of my things that I most appreciate about him is, I think it was both of them, they would read to us all the time. I think from that is why I'm so interested in literature, which is a big part of my life now.
I mean, there are times when we've both disappointed him and hurt him. But even through that, hurt and that disappointment, he always reminds us that he loves us.
It's definitely, he's shown unconditional love through showing us and telling us that he'll still be our dad and still love us no matter what.
I think my dad has played a big part in shaping how I see the world and how I react to the world and relate to the world. I think part of it has to do with religion. I think just instilling those values and just a real sense of right and wrong and what justice means and what it looks like in the world.
If I'm ever a parent, I will definitely try to teach my kids how to find a gray area in things and try and take facts from both sides.
I think both of our parents have always really encouraged us and told us, I mean, every parent probably says this to their child, but you can do anything you want, you can be anything you want.
Jacob said to his son Joseph, "The blessings of a father, or I would add a mother or a grandmother or grandfather, are stronger than the blessings of the eternal mountains. What blessings will you give to a child?" Let's pray. While your heads are bowed, the prayer that I offer up comes from our stand-up parent support group here at Church of the Resurrection, and I just thought it was a powerful prayer, so I lift this up on our behalf. God, give us wisdom to guide our children. Help us learn what to give and what to withhold. Show us when to reprimand and when to praise. Make us gentle and considerate, yet firm and watchful. Keep us from weak indulgence or great severity. Give us the courage to be disliked sometimes by our children when we must do necessary things that are displeasing to them. Give us all the virtues we need to lead them by word and example in the path of righteousness. And Lord, I would add to this prayer, forgive us for the ways that we have failed. And we pray that by your Spirit you would make up for our deficiencies. Take care of our kids. Help them to know you and to love you and to follow you and to be the human beings you long for them to be. And help us as a church to love children well. In your holy name, amen.